Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we talked about on yesterday's show with our New York State politics reporter Fred Mogul, the state legislative year is coming to an end and to a climax right now with a June 15th deadline for renewing and revising the rent laws and a June 19th deadline for everything else they've left for the last minute before adjournment for the year. As Fred said yesterday, deadlines organize the mind, and there they have a lot of deadline organizing to do. Governor Cuomo has listed 10 end-of-session priorities for the legislature. Other people have additional ones. We're very pleased that Governor Cuomo is back with us now. Governor, thanks as always. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. I heard two great lines. Deadlines organize the mind and the future of the banana.
Yes.
Two things I'm going to think of for the rest of the day. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. The future of the banana will credit Tanzina Vega and her takeaway show this afternoon, and deadlines organize the mind to Fred Mogul. First, I'd like to give you a blank slate to kind of make any news. Do you have any deals or progress to announce on some of this outstanding legislation as of now that the public doesn't yet know about?
Yeah, I think I would say, Brian, It's the context and the lens. We time is short. We have about 10 session days left. There are two very different things we're trying to get done, or I'm trying to get done. Let me speak for myself. One, we have certain administrative tasks, necessary tasks, rent reform, where we want the best rent regulation reforms in history, measles. So we have a law that allows mandates, vaccines, what's called the extension of the Minority and Women Business Enterprise Program, which is the best in the nation. But then also, I'm pushing very hard legal changes that reflect where we are as a society, with a federal government that's imposing an extraordinary conservative agenda. We have a society of discord and anger. There were more anti-LGBT actions over the past few days, anti-Semitic activity up 83% in the state of New York. So I'm pushing a women's rights agenda, an LGBTQ rights agenda, more protections for minorities at this time of disharmony in this state and country.
So let me jump in on one of those in particular, what you're calling the women's justice agenda, which I see includes a change in the sexual harassment laws so that someone's behavior would no longer have to be, quote, severe or pervasive under the law to be considered harassment. What would you change that language to?
Yeah. Just think about that. To be legally actionable, it has to be severe or pervasive. We want to reduce that to a standard that says you are treated less well than other similarly situated people, that you are being harassed more than other people because of your sex. The Women's Justice Agenda also says, let's finally pass the Equal Rights Amendment. For crying out loud, we've been talking about it for 30 years. You have a federal government that is disrespecting women, women's right to choose. Let New York be the bulwark of women's rights and women's justice, and let's pass the Equal Rights Amendment. It's a constitutional amendment that would add sex protection of women to the state constitution. And to me, these are just no-brainers for New York as the progressive capital.
Would adding an Equal Rights Amendment change anything with respect to women's rights in New York? I think some people argue that it's just symbolic at this point, maybe even in the country, but even more likely in a place not like in a place like New York that has very specific women's rights laws.
If it's just symbolic, then why wouldn't you do it? Obviously, it's not just symbolic because the legislature, especially the Senate, hasn't done it. And yes, on one level it is symbolic. It says in the Constitution that women have equal rights. Yes, we have many specific laws, but by the way, there are loopholes to those laws. And if there was ever a time in history to say women have equal rights, the time is now, with this federal government assaulting women's rights all across the country.
WNYC's Jessica Gould reports that Rita Passerell, a co-founder of the Sexual Harassment Working Group, said her group wants lawmakers to go even further than what you were describing before, to tighten the law that allows employers to avoid liability. For example, if employees don't report sexual harassment according to the company's procedures, so that is to make sure employers are responsible for what the supervisors they've hired do. She says, unless that, we're not going to see a change for workers. Are you for that?
I am in favor of more support for women. I'm not, especially in terms of sexual harassment. We have a bill this year that would extend the statute of limitations for rape in the second or third degree, which is now only 5 years. I'm not familiar with that particular piece of legislation, but we have done more than any state in the nation, and I have done more than any governor in the history of the state to protect women's rights. So I take a very aggressive posture on all of those laws.
You haven't heard about that liability measure yet?
No, I have not.
And the working group is also calling for equal legal protections for more people, including the LGBT community and people with disabilities. You're quoted saying you support that, but the legislature's not there?
Yes. We don't have a what they call three-way, the Assembly, the Senate, agreeing on the same bill that I could sign. And for too many years, legislatures in general, but especially in Albany, they've made the perfect the enemy of the good. And the constant refrain at the end of the legislative session is the Senate says, well, I had a bill, but the Assembly wouldn't pass it. And the Assembly says, well, I had a bill, but the Senate wouldn't pass it. That doesn't work anymore. We need progress. We need results. And yes, it would be great to write into the Constitution that everybody has equal rights and go through all these lists of different groups, but we can't get that done now. We don't have an agreement. We should be able to at least say women have equal rights. And if we don't pass that, I think it's an egregious act against women in this state.
Another bill that I see you're interested in is one allowing gestational surrogacy. Now, 47 states already allow this, and it's considered pro-LGBTQ. But historically, the objections to this have been based on class and gender, that the only women who rent their bodies for a fee to carry a fetus for other people must really need the money badly, so it's structurally exploitative of lower income women. Is that a legitimate concern in your opinion?
To me, no. 47 states allow gestational pregnancy, which means an infertile couple or an LGBTQ couple that wants to start a family but biologically cannot, can make an arrangement with a woman where she would carry the gestational pregnancy. 47 states allow it. We would have the most protective law protecting women's rights. The woman would have an attorney. The woman would have a counselor. It would be supervised by the Department of Health. But if a woman is willing to do it, not just for economic reasons, but there are women who would love to see a couple have a child even though they can't, or an LGBTQ couple. And look, we passed marriage equality. It's one of the proudest things I ever did, allowing LGBTQ couples to marry. This is the natural next step. They're married, now they want to start a family. And why wouldn't you allow it? I understand the possible fear that women could be exploited. Protect against it. And by the way, we just passed a woman's right to choose, which says a woman has a right to control her own body. Women are equal. If the woman has an attorney and a counselor, Brian, and the Department of Health is supervising it, and we're making sure that she's not being exploited, why not give the woman a right to choose? Why should government say, I don't believe women are competent to make this decision, and therefore we're going to exclude them from being able to make a decision concerning their own body, after we just argued a woman's right to choose, a woman's body is her own, a woman can make her own judgments, there shouldn't be parental consent, etc. To me, it's wholly hypocritical.
What's the strongest protection? You talked about protections to make sure that a woman is not being exploited in this respect out of financial need and kind of a financial desperation. What's the specific strong protection in that legislation? I know you said that she could have an attorney. Anything structurally about finances or anything? What's the most specific thing?
An attorney, a counselor who can represent the woman and explain to the woman the possible health risks of carrying a fetus.
Who pays for the attorney?
The sponsoring entity, whoever wants to contract with the woman, would pay for the attorney, the counselor, and the Department of Health would supervise the entire transaction. So the woman knows the risks, the benefits. The attorney is negotiating on her behalf. She's fully informed, and only after that, fully informed, advised, would she be allowed to make the decision, and the Department of Health would supervise it. 47 states. You can just contract with a woman. The woman has no protections, etc. And it's not that couples are not doing it. They're doing it. They're just leaving the state to do it. So you have LGBTQ couples or infertile couples who have to travel to another state to make an arrangement with a woman to carry a fetus.
Governor Cuomo is with us as we talk about the many pieces of legislation pending before the end of the legislative year, which is coming up on June 15th with respect to the rent laws, June 19th with respect to many other things. One progressive agenda item that I believe is not on your end of session to-do list is the Green New Deal bill. And I'm going to play a clip of a caller who called in to specifically promote this yesterday when our state politics reporter Fred Mogul was here. This is Kathy in West Islip.
I'm really interested in seeing what's going to happen with the Climate and Community Protection Act, which has majority support already in the Senate and very close to majority support in the Assembly. And it would be the Robert Reich has called it the boldest and most equitable legislation about climate change that in America, or possibly in the world, if it actually gets passed. And it is currently in discussions between the Senate and the governor's office, who put out his own climate program. But the Climate and Community Protection Act, which is called the CCPA, is much more interested in a just transition and in having good green jobs developed.
Kathy in West Islip calling yesterday's show. And just to put a little more detail on this for the listeners' benefit, under that bill, it would mandate 50% of electricity from clean, renewable energy for New York State by 2030, 100% of climate pollution ended by 2050, and 40% of clean energy funds to be invested going to disadvantaged communities that suffer the brunt of climate and traditional pollution effects. So, Governor, are you for the Climate and Community Protection Act?
Yes. There are a number of bills that are moving around. And I proposed the Green New Deal before there was a Green New Deal being discussed nationwide. This state has the most aggressive Green New Deal legislation and program in the nation by far. We just banned plastic bags. We're going to announce the largest wind turbine program in the United States of America, a worker retraining program. We have 2040 as a goal for carbon-free electric. What I don't want to do, Brian, is give people a political placebo where we put forth dates and goals that we cannot make. I believe this is the most pressing issue of our time. But I don't want to play politics with it. And I don't want to tell people we can move to a carbon-free economy in a period of time that I know that we can't.
So you're saying 2030 and 2050, those particular benchmarks, are not realistic, in your opinion? You've made that judgment?
I will make, as I said, there are a number of deadlines, and there are nuances on the deadlines. But as aggressively as it can be done, I will favor and I will do it. We are now in the midst of the most aggressive transition in the country. But I don't want to play politics with it. You know, when you talk about this transition for the economy, remember what you're talking about. Fossil fuels, no carbon emissions, no airplanes, no trains that run on diesel, all electric cars, closing all the power plants. This is a massive transformation. And I know the politics now is we can do everything by tomorrow. I have never done that. I've never said to the people of this state, I've never put forth a goal that I don't believe is realistic and that we can't meet. And we have the most realistic goal in the United States of America. If we can do it faster, nobody is going to accuse me of not being aggressive and not trying to move heaven and hell to get things done.
What?
We always have, and that's what we're talking through now with the legislature. But I'm not going to just play politics with it and tell people tomorrow we're going to have a carbon-free economy, because it's not true.
You didn't put climate legislation on the top 10 list that you would announce for the end of the session. Why not?
The top 10 list is, with now 10 days left, the short list of things that I hope we can get done. If we can get climate change also done, great. But in 10 days, you're talking about rent regulation, marijuana, driver's license for undocumented, legalizing surrogacy that we just spoke about, which is very hard, the ERA, which is very hard, changing the state sexual harassment laws, that is very hard, ending statute of limitations for rape in the second and third, which is hard. I want to outlaw the gay panic defense, which is just bizarre, where as a defense to attacking a gay person, you can now say, well, I didn't know the person was gay, and when I found out the person was a member of the LGBTQ community, I was so emotionally distressed, I attacked them. Prevailing wage legislation, minority women business enterprise legislation. I want to change pay equity laws for women. We still don't have pay equity laws for women. We're still at 88 cents to a man's dollar in New York. I want the legislature to pass special prosecutor legislation against police misconduct. They were supposed to do this 3 years ago. I did it by an executive order because the legislature wouldn't act. But an executive order, I drop dead tomorrow, Brian. It goes away. It's only my dictate. And I've been saying to them for 3 years, we need a law. And I'm going to end that executive order if they don't pass a law. So that's aggressive short list to do in 10 days.
That gay panic defense is something. I didn't know about it until it came up in the recent discussions of laws that might change. It's literally that somebody could use as a mitigating factor after they attacked a gay person that they had homophobia.
It codifies homophobia. It codifies homophobia. It says As a legal defense, I was so emotionally disturbed when I found out the person was gay that I was out of my mind, so to speak, and therefore I attacked them and hurt them or killed them. And that is a defense. It is the codification of homophobia. And it's valid in this state, and it's a darn disgrace.
So we'll see if the legislature changes that one by the end of the month. On the rent laws, which have many elements under consideration, as you know, tenant advocates are concerned about your commitment because you've taken so much in campaign finance from the real estate industry over the years. How will you prove their skepticism unfounded?
First of all, you know, God bless politics. The state Senate has taken real estate money. The Democratic Senate Campaign Committee has taken millions of dollars. And for the senators to now stand up and say, well, I'm not going to take any real estate money right now is such a canard. And look, when you do fundraising, I've accepted fundraising from, as has the Senate, as has the Assembly, from numerous interests, and obviously real estate people in New York are a large group. But if anyone thinks a contribution is going to affect my judgment, they don't know me, and they don't know what I've done as governor or attorney general or as HUD secretary or what I did with my father for 12 years. If your judgment can be swayed by a campaign contribution, you should be in jail, period. And this notion that I took campaign real estate money, but the Senate didn't or the Assembly didn't is just false. And it's untrue, and the press have allowed this misconception to continue. I've been HUD Secretary, Head of Housing for the United States of America. I started my career building housing for the homeless and low-income housing. I've done it all my life. The tenants cannot have a more aggressive advocate than I am.
Let me get through a couple of more things, Governor, before we run out of time. WNYC and our New York City News website, Gothamist, reported this morning that they were informed by multiple MTA sources that Andy Byford, New York City Transit President, is expected to leave his job this month after a year and a half at the position. They report that one of the reasons he may be leaving is because you and he may not see eye to eye on how to run the transit system, like the amount of money it will take to fund the fast forward plan for rapid repairs, the kind of technology to fix the signal system. And there was the time you announced the entirely new L-Train plan after he had been working on a different one for months. So two things. Do you have confidence in Andy Byford as TA president? And if so, why do you keep intervening in his agency business, as some MTA sources have put it?
Yeah, let's, some facts here, which sometimes are helpful. Andy Byford is a division head for the New York City Transit Authority. Phil Eng runs the Long Island Railroad. Kathy Rinaldi runs the Metro North. Those are the three divisions. I hired Andy Byford. I interviewed him. But the MTA is going through an overall transformation. The MTA needs to make major reforms. And this is the top leadership of MTA. This is the board. This is the chairman of the board. This is the president. All who are above Byford, Eng, and Rinaldi. The U.S. attorney just subpoenaed them for Long Island Railroad overtime abuses. When I was attorney general, I did Long Island Railroad overtime abuses and disability abuses. I'm not happy with the job the MTA is doing. The riders are not happy with the job the MTA is doing. 2 years ago, I announced the Subway Action Plan and declared an emergency, and we invested in an additional $800 million. With this now actions of the U.S. Attorney and the Queens District Attorney, we now have an issue of violating the law. So I am with the writers of New York. And if you can find a writer who says, I'm happy with the MTA, they're doing a great job.
But Andy Byford,
please have them call me.
Andy Byford was your guy to fix it, and he instituted this fast-forward plan. I think he wants more money rather than less to do this even more. Do you have confidence in Andy Byford today?
Look, I have confidence in Byford and Eng and Rinaldi. You have senior management that is above them and a board that actually runs it. And that's where the issue is going to lie for the transformation. In terms of the budget is the budget. You know, I am not in favor of an additional fare increase. The MTA just raised the fares on subways and buses.
Do you have any indication that the MTA board does not have full confidence in Andy Byford?
You'd have to talk to the board about that. But in terms of additional revenue, we have a $30 billion plan. It's not what Byford wanted. It's not what Eng wanted. It's not what Rinaldi wanted. It's not what the board wanted. They wanted more money, more money, more money. The money would have to come from the fares, and they would have to increase fares. And I'm not in favor of increasing the fares. I believe the MTA can do a better job with the billions of dollars they now have. This U.S. attorney and this Queens DA are saying there have been significant overtime abuses focusing on the Long Island Railroad. And what New Yorkers want is their money's worth. So, I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I will pay, but don't rip me off. And be efficient and be effective.
Speaking.
And unless you get riders who say, I want to pay more for the fare, there is no more money, Brian.
Speaking of Queens DA, I read that you're endorsing and holding a fundraiser for Queens Borough President Melissa Katz, who is running for Queens DA in the primary later this month. The most progressive wing, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is backing Tiffany Caban, whose background is as a public defender. Why go for the more establishment candidate?
I don't think, you know, establishment, progressive, this is all terms of the current political frenzy. I know Melissa. She is a different type of politician. She is gutsy. She's tough. She gets things done. You know, most politicians are very timid by nature. The expression is the politician who does nothing wrong. I am, as you know, aggressively trying to bring change to New York. We're building a new LaGuardia Airport in Queens, an air train in Queens, which is long overdue, new Kew Gardens interchange, new John F. Kennedy Airport. And I needed people to help support these changes, even though they caused disruption. And Katz was willing to stand up and say, we need these changes. I know they're not popular. People don't want to go through the disruption. You build a new LaGuardia Airport, you have to bring in trucks. But she did it, and she showed guts, and that impressed me.
Are you writing off the progressive movement within the party as a frenzy? You just used that word?
No, that's your terminology.
No, no, you used the word.
Yeah, I said you said establishment versus progressive.
And you said frenzy.
I don't think, the frenzy of terminology. You are part of the establishment. Does that mean you're not progressive? Aha. I rest my case.
I don't even know what that means. But
you don't want
but
to.
This plus your early Joe Biden endorsement does put you clearly, as many people, not only people labeling it from the media, but people within the party would say, is in the more centrist wing as the Democratic Party grapples with its modern identity. Why is that where you want to be?
I think that's a lot of garbage. I think I am the most progressive Democrat who has served as governor. I don't think you can be more progressive than I am. I don't think you can find anyone in this state who has achieved more progressive results from me. You tell me who else got marriage equality passed and gender passed and the strongest gun law in the United States of America and is pushing right now to get the women's ERA passed and more protections for women in terms of pay equity and sexual harassment. That's progressive. It's not I call myself a progressive and therefore I am. It's what you believe and what you do. And I don't believe I'm part of any group other than the most progressive democratic ideology and accomplishments. It's easy, Brian, to call yourself something and label yourself something, especially if you don't have to do anything that proves it.
Last thing, we've just got like 15 seconds left, but you seem to say yesterday that the marijuana reform legislation or the recreational legalization legislation is dead for this session. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying I don't think, as we sit here with 10 days left, the Senate has the votes. The reason I say that is because they said they don't have the votes. So I'm just taking them at their word. And my point earlier was Melinda Katz's establishment. Once you start to play that game, then you start to say anyone who has been around for any period of time is now quote-unquote establishment and not quote-unquote progressive. And that is not true and not fair. And deceptive, because today's reformer and the new face today is tomorrow's incumbent, right? So that means you could only be a new face progressive until you're elected, and then you're an incumbent establishment, which is a lot of nonsense.
Governor, thanks as always. Talk to you next time.